The position pays well, comes with health insurance, and George has a line of liquid crystal research. His eyes widen, then instantly narrow.
Georgina Sepulveda stole your job. And you're thinking of working for her.
She didn't steal my job. Irritation bubbles inside me, but I quash it down. She deserved it, and I can learn a lot from her. Honestly, it feels like a perfect match, and I'm leaning toward accepting. Dr. L says nothing and just stares at me. The satisfied smile is gone now, and I nearly shiver. What do you think? He's quiet for a few more moments. Then he leans back in his chair, lips thin, and asks,
What is it that you are here for, Elise? My blessing to accept this position?
I take a deep breath. Another. Honesty, I tell myself like a mantra. Honesty. I can be true to myself. People who care will stay, even when I'm not the Elsie they want. Yes, I understand your reticence, and I respect your wisdom, but...
If you really understand, you will stop considering it at once.
My brain stumbles and goes blank for a minute.
What? Setting aside the humiliation of working for someone who beat you to a job, I have researched Georgina Sepulveda. Not only is she an experimentalist, but she also frequently collaborates with Jonathan Smith Turner.
I'm not sure what feels the most like a punch. Dr. L's cutting tone, or the shock of hearing him say Jack's name. This has nothing to do with him. George is an established scientist in her own right, and—
Enough, Elise.
He lifts his hand as though I'm a well-trained pet who will fall silent at a simple gesture. Suddenly, he looks tired, as though exhausted by an unruly child's tantrum.
You will not accept this position.
I frown. For a long moment, I have no idea what to do. Because on one side, there's the simple semantic knowledge of what Lauren Doe's Elsie should do. Agree. Apologize. Chalk her stubbornness up to meningitis. Leave after some teary genuflections and continue her life as it has been for the past 6 years. On the other, there's the Elsie I want to be. And the things she chooses to say. Dr. Lauren Doe, I will accept the position if it's what I think is best. My voice comes out surprisingly firm. And while I understand your reservations and appreciate your guidance, I will ultimately decide,
you silly, stubborn girl.
His tone, at once harsh and condescending, is like an ice bucket pouring over my head. You have no right to talk to me this way. Dr. L stands slowly, as he often does during our conversations. For the first time in 6 years, I stand too.
As your academic advisor, I can talk to you however I choose.
He leans forward. I have to lock my knees to not step back.
If you are adamant that you wish to work under an experimentalist, he continues coldly, perhaps we may review some of the physicists who approached me about you in the past. But what did you say? I am open to reviewing other offers. But Dr. Sepulveda's is not.
Other offers? You said there were no other offers.
There were some. From experimental physicists. Absolutely unacceptable. However, they would still be better than working with.
But you never told me.
Because they did not bear contemplating.
The room spins, topples, stops to a crack within me, a neat split. You! I cannot speak, cannot find the words. It was for me to decide. You knew how much I was struggling financially, how little research I was able to do this past year, and you didn't tell me? His mouth twists into a downward line.
I am your mentor. It is my job to guide you toward what's best for you.
You overstepped, I say, so forceful, so different from my usual soft buts or reluctant yeses that for a moment he looks taken aback. But he recovers quickly, and his smile is chilling.
Elise, if it weren't for me, you wouldn't have entered graduate school. I chose you. Whatever career you have, you owe it to me, and you should be very careful not to forget it.
I cannot believe my ears. This time I do take a step back, and another one, and all of a sudden it dawns on me that Jack was right about you.
I have no idea who Jack is, nor do I care. Now please sit down. Let's discuss this civilly, and
you are controlling and manipulative. I try to swallow past the knot in my throat. Jack was right. You really did ruin Greta Turner's career. His eyes narrow to bitter slits.
Ah, that's who Jack is then.
He shakes his head twice, like I've disappointed him profoundly.
You have been associating with Smith Turner, the man who jeopardized the very existence of your field.
What did you do to Greta?
His mother,
Lorindo rolls his eyes impatiently,
doesn't matter. Greta Turner doesn't matter and never did. If anything, her behavior should be a warning to you. There is no room for silly, stubborn girls in physics. And why would you believe anything Smith Turner has told you?
His nostrils flare.
The article he wrote was a malicious hoax that ruined and derailed several careers and made it exponentially harder for theorists to have their work funded. We became the laughing stock of the academic world.
That's true, I bite out. But it doesn't erase what you did to Greta Turner.
Do not mention her to me again.
Lorindo's voice is harsher than I ever remember hearing it.
And show some gratitude to the person who has given you a career.
I shake my head, feeling close to tears. I won't cry here, though. I thought you wanted me to be the best possible physicist.
What I want, Elise, is for you to do as I say.
A knock. The door opens before I can turn around.
Dr. Lorindo, I have something for you to sign.
Oh, Elsie,
haven't seen you in a while. How've you been?
I recognize the voice from my grad school days. Devang, the department administrator. I turn and wave at him, feeling numb. My hand doesn't feel like mine.
Come in, Devang, Dr. L says.
I'm nauseous, dizzy. For the past 6 years, I've tried to be the Elsie that Dr. L wanted. Resourceful, hardworking, tireless. Everything I needed, money, insulin, time, rest, mental fucking space. Everything I needed, I put after my work. I followed his advice before anyone else's, thinking that he had my best interests in mind, thinking that he deserved an Elsie who strove for brilliance. And all along, all he wanted was someone he could control.
Would you rather I come back later?
Devang is asking.
No,
Dr. L says, eyes looking into me, lips pinched tight.
Elise was just about to leave.
I hold his gaze, knowing the first time I was truly honest with him is likely going to be the last time I'll ever see him. Dr. Lorindo, I say before turning around, you should really start calling me Elsie. 25. Ductility. From Michelle Hannaway 5 at gmail.com. Subject: Why don't you pick up your phone? It's been 3 days. This message has no body. From MarioLover666@gmail.com. Subject, re.
Death in the family. Can't come to class. Hey, Mrs. Hannaway, what do you mean, who died? Pretty sure you can't ask me that. It's a HIPAA violation.
From dupont.camilla@bu.edu. Subject, re. Not who you think I am. Dr. Hannaway, I apologize. I mixed you up with Dr. Hannaday, who teaches my Shakespeare After Dark Intercoursing the Bard class. He's actually a man in his 70s with bushy sideburns and chronic nostril boogers. So, oops, and LOL. Thank you very much for answering my questions anyway. I ran with your idea of looking at how Breaking Dawn by Stephanie Meyer is loosely based on A Midsummer Night's Dream and actually got an A+. I attached the paper in case you're interested. It's titled Twilight vs. Shakespeare. May the horniest triumph. Also, I looked you up on the BU database, and you teach Intro to Thermodynamics? I'm thinking of signing up for your class next year. I have a STEM requirement, and you've been so nice. If anyone can help me understand stuff like gravity or long division, that's you. Cam. From greenbergburn@northeastern.edu. Subject, formal complaint.
Dear Elsie, I wanted to thank you again for our conversation, re your former advisor. The pattern of behavior you have highlighted is highly concerning, and an investigation on the matter has started. For now, I want to reassure you that part of my commitment as the new chair of the physics department here at Northeastern is to counteract the secretive, toxic, unregulated academic environment that made it possible for Dr. Lorando to isolate you through the years. I will keep you updated. Best, Bernard Greenberg, PhD. My decision is already made by Tuesday night, but it's not until Friday morning that I get on the subway and head toward Cambridge. I walk through Harvard Square, coat open in the middle of a delightfully sunny 60-degree February day that's probably paid for by several yards of coral bleaching somewhere in the Red Sea. I feel much like I have for the rest of the week. Raw, delicate, a little bumbling, as though I'm gingerly trying on someone else's life. It's my first time in the building, but I find the office easily. When I knock, a voice yells from inside, "I'm not here. Don't come in. Go away." I laugh and open the door anyway. "Oh my God, Elsie, come in. I thought you were one of my colleagues, or students, or family members, basically anyone else." George seems overjoyed to see me. Her office resembles her, a little messy, but cozy and comfortable. She begins to move a stack of printouts from the chair, but I shake my head. "No need. I don't really have time to stay. I wanted to talk to you in person, about the job." "Oh." Her expression briefly shifts into a wince, then reverts back to a small, reassuring smile. "You didn't have to come all the way over here for that. I totally understand that working for an experimentalist might not be your ideal career, and I have no doubt that you'll find a tenure-track position soon. And like I said, I think you and I should still—" "Actually," I clear my throat. "I came here to accept." She blinks, many times. "To accept?" I take a deep breath, smile, and nod. "Yes. To accept the job." "Yes. Yes. Yes. To be clear, you're taking the job." "Yes." She screams and hugs me tight. And after a startled moment, I hug her back. And about 10 seconds into that, something breaks through the foggy haze of the past few days. I feel selfishly, beautifully happy. I just chose something on my own for my own, without first building a sophisticated theoretical model of other people's advice, preferences, needs.
without the nagging feeling that the only path I could take was the one pre-trodden for me. This decision is all mine. I wanted to tell you in person, I say when we let go. And I wanted to thank you for the opportunity. My smile wobbles a little. I could get emotional, but not yet. First, I have things to say. And I'd love to set up a meeting, maybe for the next week. I don't know if I mentioned it to you, but I've been working on several algorithms regarding the behaviors of bidimensional liquid crystals for, well, years now. Lots of incomplete projects I want to finish up. I'd love to tell you more about it, get your input. I bite my lower lip. Maybe it could be part of our collaborative research too? Yes, absolutely. I'd love to hear all about it, she grins. And then, almost abruptly, doesn't. I really didn't think you were going to accept. I nod. I know. My heart beats a little harder. But in the end, it was an easy choice. Because I wanted to. I leave with a promise to meet her for drinks next week when her friend B's in town. The ride back home is still delicate, but a little less raw. When I tap through my phone in search of a good song, the old notifications of Jack's unanswered calls stare back at me, unflinching. He hasn't tried to contact me since the weekend, and I wonder if he's angry at me. I wonder if he's sad. I wonder if he's disappointed. Then I remember, I'm angry, and sad, and disappointed. Yes, Jack was right about Lauren Doe, but I'm still furious at both of them. They lied, withheld information, presumed to know what was best for me, and a new, vengeful version of me revels in the way these two men who hate each other are now tangled up together in the expanse of my rage. Anger is not a new emotion, per se. Not for me. But for the first time in my life, I'm letting myself experience it. Desirable Elsies were never allowed to acknowledge negative feelings. But the Elsie I'm discovering I am is in the eye of several. And instead of trying to channel, disassemble, toss, forget, bury, transform, choke, erase, disappear those feelings, instead of doing any of that, she just lets them be. Breathes them in, then out. Then in again. The therapist I once talked with but never went back to because the copay was too steep even with Dad's health insurance would probably call this wallowing, unhealthy, destructive. But I'm not so sure. I treasure my newfound feelings, hoard them. Every once in a while, I study them, turn them around, squint at them like they're a ripe piece of fruit. Plucked from a mysterious tree that shouldn't even be growing in my yard. When I pop them in my mouth to swallow them whole, they taste at once bitter and delicious. For reasons that probably have to do with dopamine and oxytocin and other stupid chemicals in my head, Jack is ubiquitous. A shadow in the Walgreens line while I buy my insulin. The tall man waiting at the bus stop. The deep chuckle on my way to the UMass faculty meeting. Solidly nowhere, vanishingly everywhere. But it's okay. For the first time, when faced with a conflict situation with someone I care about, I don't feel the urge to smooth things over. And it's ironic, in an Alana sort of way, that the main reason is Jack's very voice in my head asking, "What do you want, Elsie?" I want to claw at your face, Jack. And then I want to bite into your shoulder while you hold me tight. But I will settle for just being sustainedly, explosively angry. So I let myself do just that. And it bleeds over to other things, too. I ignore Mom's panic about my brothers going into debt to out-truck each other. I say no to manning the table for the physics society at the Boston Extracurricular Fair. When Cece asks if there's something wrong, I've been distracted, Too lost in thoughts of Jack acting like an entitled, irresponsible little shit for 15 years, and then having the gall to see through me and make me laugh like no one before, and offers to watch Delicatessen with me.
To relax a bit.
I say, no thank you. Then slip into my room with a block of cheese to comfort read Bellis fan fiction. It's a balmy Wednesday afternoon. I just spotted Jack in the crowd. It was a postmodern clothespin sculpture. My heart hurts with fury and something I won't allow myself to name, and I realize something. The last time I felt this low was after JJ kicked me out and my entire life crumbled down like a shit cookie. Except that at the time, I walked away convinced that I needed to try harder to be the Elsie others wanted. This time, what do you want, Elsie? Maybe I'm not stumbling through someone else's life. Maybe I'm just living mine for the first time. When I get home, Cece is wearing a teddy, an apron, a single knee sock, nothing else. She's cooking and swaying to the sound of something I cannot hear, occasionally breaking into off-key singing in the direction of Hedgie, who keeps on frolicking in a bowl of dry kitten food. It's a lot of chaotic energy, even for her. When I step closer, she takes out one AirPod and grins.
Found $10 on the bathroom floor of Boylston Hall and went to the supermarket, baby. We're having tartiflette, but with no bacon and extra cheese.
I need to tell you something. Her smile stays in place.
Shoot!
It'll take a few minutes.
Okay.
She takes out the other pod.
Shoot.
I open my mouth and nothing happens. Air comes in, doesn't go back out. I squeeze my eyes shut.
No need to shoot if you don't want to.
There's a tinge of worry in her voice, a line between her eyes.
You could fire or discharge or...
I want to. It's just... I'm not motorically able to. Which Cece might know because she crosses her arms, tilts her head in that compassionate way of hers, and tells me.
Maybe if you say it in a funny accent, it'll be easier? May I suggest Australian? Not to be culturally insensitive, but those closed E's are just...
I hated In the Mood for Love, I blurt out. And I find very little enjoyment in Wong Kar-wai's filmography. Cece startles, physically, spiritually.
But they are amazing.
I know. Well, I don't know. They look like I should find them amazing, but to me, they're just sad and kind of slow. Still better than the Russian ones from the 70s, which feel like rubbing brambles against my eyeballs. And I really think producers should stop giving money to Lars von Trier and instead pick a good charity. Even just flush it down the garbage disposal, honestly. And don't get me started about 2001 A Space Odyssey. She gasps like this is a theater play.
You said you loved it!
Maybe. I mostly repeated things I found online. She frowns at the backsplash tiles.
Your review did sound very similar to Roger Ebert's, she mumbles to herself.
I hate all auteur-style movies. My mouth feels like a desert. Then it gets even drier when Cece asks me with a scowl,
what do you like then?
I try to swallow, fail. Twilight's my favorite. Cece's eyes bug out. She opens her mouth, closes it, opens it, closes it, opens it one last time.
Which one?
She asks, sounding constipated. I don't know, I wince. All of them. The fourth? Is that a whimper? Maybe. Yeah. And I don't know what I expected her reaction would be, but it was not this one. Not her glaring at me, and then something hitting me hard on the forehead, and then again. And then, is this? I lift my hands and take a protective step back.
Are you throwing cheddar cubes at? Damn right I am.
She takes a 2-second break to turn off the stove and starts again, with improved aim and vigor.
I back down till the counter stops me. I knew you weren't watching hentai porn that time. I knew I saw that shovel-faced guy on the screen. I knew it. I knew it. I...
Not the cheese, Cece! The stoning stops. And when I peek between my fingers, Cece is there, a bag of great value cube cheddar clutched in her fist, staring at me. Her eyes are brimming wet.
Why?
She asks. And my heart breaks, and I want to take it all back. It was a joke. I love Wong Kar-wai, and Kubrick is the best. I'm still the Elsie she wants, and tonight we can have a Jodorowsky marathon.
It's such a small lie in the grand scheme of our friendship.
Except that I've built my entire life on small lies. And over time, they've all grown to be huge. And the Elsie that Cece wants is, first and foremost, not a liar. Because I shake my head. I cannot even say it. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Because I try in a poor man's Australian accent. I thought that if you knew we weren't into the same movies, then you...
I can't make myself finish. A single tear slides down her cheek.
Please tell me you weren't afraid I wouldn't love you anymore.
I can only look at her, apologetic.
Oh, honey.
My eyes are burning too.
I'm so sorry. Elsie.
She takes one slow step toward me, then another, then two more, and we're clutching each other in a way we haven't for a long time. Ever, maybe. And I'm thinking that she smells like cheese and flowers and something ineffably homey and comforting.
I will love you forever, she says into my hair, even if you're an animal with no taste.
I know. I'm just, she pulls back to look at me.
Incredibly messed up?
Yeah. My laugh is wet.
It's okay. It's not like I'm any better,
she says darkly. Her slight shoulders rise and fall.
Anything else you've been faking?
Not really. I scratch my nose. Flushable wipes are not really flushable.
Oh?
She cocks her head.
Is that something you were faking?
Not really, but you should stop using them.
Okay.
She nods.
My poor butt.
Oh, and Hedgie and I hate each other. Her eyes narrow.
Now you're making shit up.
I call her the P word when you're gone.
The P word?
Pin cushy.
Don't you dare say it. We're her moms.
I consider myself more of an evil stepmother. She slaps my arm.
Who even are you?
I try to swallow, but my throat is stuffed full. So I settle for holding out my hand and meet Cece's eyes squarely for what feels like the first time. I'm Elsie, and I really like cheese, particle physics, and movies with sparkly vampires. She takes it with a watery smile.
I'm Celeste.
Her fingers are sticky, a little gross. I love her so much.
I'm sure that we'll be the best of friends.
26. Liquid crystals.
I rinse the dirty cheddar rescued from the floor, thinking we should probably sweep more often. I hope we don't get tetanus. Just as Cece stands triumphantly with the last 3 blocks in hand and says,
"This floor is surprisingly clean."
I smile into the swirling drain.
"So,"
she leans against the sink, arms crossed.
"How much of you coming out as a lying liar has to do with Jack?"
I sober up and kill the faucet. "It's not," I shake my head. "It's a mess."
"What is?"
My heart rings. "Everything."
But you had your sexcation the other weekend.
I heat up. We didn't really. I notice her raised eyebrow and abort my deny the obvious mission. Have you seen Kirk recently?
This is such an unskilled deflection attempt, I'm just gonna pretend it never happened. So what exactly isn't going on between you and the Jackster?
Whatever it seemed like. Wherever we were going, I grabbed the dishcloth. We should probably clean that, too. I think that might be nowhere.
How come?
I don't really feel like meeting her eyes. He lied to me about something. And before you say anything, I know it's rich of me to call out people for lying, but... She drums her fingers against the steel of the sink.
Does this have to do with the article?
Yeah, I sigh, folding the ratty cloth. I'm done with sweeping stuff under the rug. If something makes me mad, I'm going to let myself be mad. And that article has been the ammo people use to make fun of my work for 15 years, so...
No, I meant the article he wrote today.
I lift my eyes. The what?
You haven't seen it?
Seen what?
The entirety of academic Twitter is talking about it. Even the humanities. And you know how busy we are begging our boards of directors not to shutter our departments. Did you really not see it? Jack published an article today in Annals of Theoretical Physics.
I'm positive that a mallard must have flown in and eaten Cece's brain.
Wait. I was wrong, she admits, and I relax. It's not an article. More like one of those op-eds.
Maybe she's high. Has she been inhaling Toron fumes?
There are no op-eds about science. There are op-eds about everything. Trout fishing, plasma coolant, velvet suits, the unbearable lightness of being.
Okay, yes, but Jack didn't write an op-ed, and if he had, he wouldn't have published it in the Annals. Her brow furrows stubbornly. She picks up her phone, taps the screen a few times, muttering something about the incredulity of Thomas, then thrusts it in my face.
Cece, I can't read anything that's 1 millimeter from my nose. Here.
She drops the phone in my palm and goes back to the tartiflette. I let my eyes focus on the words and the floor wobbles. Jerks. Then it drops from underneath my feet. On the home page of the journal that published Einstein, Feynman, Hawking, there is an open letter written by Jonathan Smith Turner. An open letter addressed to the scientific community. I take a few steps back, stopping when my thighs hit the table. The words on the screen feel like something Jack is murmuring in my ears.
The last time I published in Annals of Theoretical Physics, I was 17 years old and motivated by something that had nothing to do with science. Revenge. My mother, Greta Turner, has long since passed away, but she was a brilliant theoretical physicist. When I was in my mid-teens, I started developing an affinity for physics myself, and as a consequence, I read her diaries and reached out to her former colleagues, hoping to get a better idea of what a career in physics might entail. That is how I discovered her awful experiences with her former mentor, who had forced her to leave academia. That man was Christoph Lorandeau, and at the time he was the editor-in-chief of Annals. When I tried to report him for what he'd done to my mother, I was told there were no grounds to open an investigation. So, I took matters into my own hands. I knew what kind of article Dr. Lorandeau would look upon favorably, and I knew from the grapevine that he was infamous for being lax when it came to the peer review of works that he believed would further his own scientific agenda. So I wrote something that would fit those criteria. Again, my aim was to sabotage Lorandeau's career. And as unethical as that may sound, it's something I stand by. He did suffer setbacks, and for several years he was unable to receive funding or mentor students, an outcome I cannot regret. But that's not all that happened. After I exploited one specific weakness within one specific journal to target one specific individual, The scientific community began to use my article as an example of the decline of theoretical physics. And what I regret is that as it happened, I stayed silent. For over 15 years, I did nothing to dispel the idea that I believed theoretical physics to be inferior. I became a symbol of the enmity between theoretical and experimental physics, and of that, I am ashamed. I am ashamed of how it must have made my theorist colleagues feel, and I am ashamed that I did not quell these assumptions for over a decade. Above all, I am ashamed that I put a person I deeply respect in the position of having to explain to me the consequences of my own actions because I was too proud, too angry, and too self-centered to realize them. So let me send a message to anyone who still cites my article as a weapon in some petty war within our discipline. Don't. I never believed that theoretical physics was less rigorous or less important a field than experimental physics. And if you do believe that, you are mistaken, and you should read some of the most meaningful theory work of the past few decades. I am citing several below.
Oh my God. My hands are trembling. My legs, too. And the floor, I'm pretty sure. Oh my God.
Yep.
I look up. I'd forgotten Cece existed. I'd forgotten to breathe. I'd forgotten the rest of the world was a thing.
That's like the science equivalent of proposing with a flash mob.
No, I shake my head forcefully enough to scroll out everything that's inside it. Mashed potatoes, probably. He's not proposing. He's just, I crumple in a chair.
Finally reckoning with his decades-long evil legacy because he wants you to be his girlfriend who sends him cute little heart emojis and 69s with him every other day.
I shake my head again. The truth is, it feels like it. Like the letter is addressed to me. No, he doesn't.
He does. He has that look. I can just tell he's into all sorts of filthy stuff. She grins. Anyway, just from reading this, Madame, person he deeply respects, it doesn't feel like you two are going nowhere.
My mind is tottering in circles. No.
Yes.
It's complicated.
What is?
Jack. Jack is complicated. I massage my temples.
Or maybe not. Maybe he's not, but I am complicated. Too complicated. Okay. Totally. I'm not going to spare your feelings and fib about how complicated you aren't. You did lie to me about liking David Lynch for 7 solid years. Unless you do like,
no.
Right. Well, this man just wrote an op-ed that's gonna get the STEM lords to throw parsnips at him till the day he dies. And I'm pretty sure he did it for you. So that's something you might want to consider. I mean, he does look pretty sturdy. He can take a few parsnips. He could probably take a whole cauliflower field. Plus, the power of love will numb the pain.
Jesus. I cover my eyes.
Shit. Elsie, she kneels in front of me. What's the problem?
Everything.
Right. But if you had to be specific.
He's right. He was right. I was mad because he lied and he said that I was scared, and I am scared. That I'm too messed up for him.
For Jack?
I nod into my hands. I lie all the time about who I am. Well, Jack is just...
Oh, Elsie. He sees everything. Elsie.
And he'll get sick of my bullshit.
Elsie.
And he's way too tall for me.
Ouch!
My arms drop. There is a red bruise on the back of my hand. Another cheddar cube on the floor.
What the? Stop whining all over my kitchen, she commands. Fear aside, do you want to be with Jack? Do you like being with Jack?
So much. So, so much. So, so, so much. I like it. But maybe I still shouldn't.
There are things like that. That feel nice but are bad for you. Like MDMA or Q-tips for ear cleanings. I don't think Jack qualifies, though.
Why? Cece's eyes are earnest. Her fingers reach out for mine.
You know me, Elsie. I hate giving credit to a dude who probably went to kindergarten at a French chateau. But
you've been seeing him for what?
Weeks?
And I don't know what it is precisely that you two have been doing for each other.
But he just let go of a very shitty thing he's been carrying around for half his life. And you, I feel like I know you better than I ever did before. And I'm thinking that maybe I owe it a little bit to him.
I look at Cece, letting her words swirl around me in messy, complicated, unpredictable patterns. Then they settle inside my brain, and I can taste their truth. 4 weeks ago, I was a different person. No, 4 weeks ago, I was an infinite number of different people. I've put myself in 100 tiny boxes, played 1,000 roles, sculpted myself in 1,000,000 smooth lines. But for the first time in memory, I'm fighting against that. And what do you want, Elsie? I squeeze my hand tight around Cece's. Then I stand, pick up my coat, and run out the door. There's something new on the door of Jack's office. Under the Jonathan Smith Turner PhD plaque and the Physics Institute Director subplaque, someone taped a printout of the Annals article Cece showed me earlier today. All 2 pages, including the citations, one of which is an article of mine. Dr. Hennaway? I turn to Michi walking down the hallway. Oh, hi. Hi! She smiles widely at me. Can I help you? I point at the door, which looks a lot like I'm pointing at the paper. I quickly lower my hand. I was looking for Jack. I think he went straight home after the faculty meeting. Shit. No, not shit. This is good. I can go to his place. I know where he lives. I've basically lived there too for a couple of weekends. So this is perfect. It gives me more time to think about what I'm going to tell him since I have no idea. Why am I here? Just swept by the currents like a salmon during mating season. I shoot Michi a quick smile and speed walk down the hallway. I think she yells after me that she followed me on Twitter, but I don't stop to investigate. Instead, I rehearse my conversation with Jack. Hi, hey. Oh, hello. I've seen the article. Sounds like a good beginning. But I could also start softer. I was just in the area and my dog ran away. Will you help me find it? It's a black and white Newfie with a big lolling tongue and yes, if I have to make up an imaginary pet, I'm going to choose a cute one. I'm thinking so hard I barely register that someone is calling me. And it takes a Dr. Hennaway, is that you? For me to recognize the voice. I turn around. It's Volkov. And behind him, Ikagawa and Massey. At their side, Monica, Sater, Andrea. Half a dozen more people whose names I don't remember from my interview. And behind, an entire head taller, 1,000,000 miles wider, only just stepping out of the conference room. Jack. Of course. Michi was wrong. Faculty meeting only just ended. Dr. Hennaway, Volkov says fondly, like I'm his niece who should visit more often. And even though there are 20 people staring at me and I'd like to disappear into the woods, I actually lift my hand and smile weakly.
Are you an ocean?
He asks.
Because you just waved.
Oh, God. When did this become my life? Elsie, Monica butts in warily.
Is everything okay?
My heart slams with mortification. I bet she's afraid I'll make a scene. I got lost. Forgot my colonics paraphernalia in the bathroom a few weeks ago. Have you seen a Newfie?
No, no. Come on, Elsie. Honesty.
I need to talk to Jack, I say in my newly found firm voice. Jack, who has, by now, noticed me and is coming toward me, standing in front of me, towering toweringly with a puzzled, towered frown directed at me. Deep breaths. It's okay. This is fine.
I didn't know you two talked, Monica says, looking skeptically between us.
I learned a few years ago,
Jack tells her calmly, staring only at me. She's little more than a fly buzzing around us.
And Elsie's in the process of mastering the art of speaking for herself.
I glare. His mouth twitches.
Elsie, has Jonathan been bothering you? Because I...
No, not at all. I'm beat red. We do talk. Her eyes widen in surprise, then narrow in suspicion.
Does this talking you have been doing have anything to do with Jonathan's article? She says.
To whom, I'm not sure. Jack keeps looking at me, silent for a stretched beat.
The article was overdue.
It certainly was, Monica huffs. Still, this seems highly irregular.
Not highly,
he shrugs.
More like middle of the road.
She stiffens.
Jonathan.
Monica, Volkov calls from behind. Will you help us with the meeting minutes?
She turns away with a threatening look at Jack, and suddenly I'm very, very aware that coming here might not have been my best idea, for a number of reasons. I'm sorry, I say. He cocks his head.
Why are you sorry?
I don't know. I gesture around us, then look, and it's a bad idea. People are lingering in the hallway, and I don't think they can hear us, but they're sure looking. And I wouldn't want to... Wait. No. I don't care about people and what they think. I figured you'd be in your office.
Nope. We could go,
he offers.
Though if we disappear together into my office, I nod.
Okay, so I do care a bit about what people think. Just the right amount. Maybe I don't want them to picture me bent over Jack's desk. Maybe I'm still confused. I'll think more on this later.
Elsie?
Yes? He's laughing at me, and I hate it. And I love it.
What are you doing here?
I clear my throat. I know we had a really bad fight, and I didn't answer your calls because I was really mad. And I know you thought that that was it and we would never meet again, but...
I didn't.
Oh. Oh?
I was giving you the space you asked for.
He looks patiently amused.
And there was something I needed to do.
Right. The article. I know you wrote it because it was overdue and not because of me, but...
Both.
I still wanted to... What did you say?
It was overdue, and I did it for you.
My mouth is sand dry. For me. He nods, and his amusement shifts into something more serious.
What you said was true, and it was the right thing to do. But also... Elsie, there's very little I wouldn't do for you.
My cheeks burn hot and ice cold. Jack, I need to explain. My phone chooses the worst possible time to vibrate. I glance down at the screen. Mom, reject the call and immediately look back up at Jack. Sorry, honesty. We're doing this with honesty. I inhale. I came because I have several honest things to say to you. His mouth twitches.
Please do.
Right. Okay. Then, first of all, I hate that you didn't like Twilight, and it invalidates all your other opinions, in movies especially, but not exclusively. More phone buzzing, which I ignore.
I see.
You need to buy curtains because your apartment is way too bright, way too early. And your grilled cheese is good, but it could be better if you added aioli.
Of course.
And the eye twat buzzes again, and damn it. Mom, I pick up. Not now, please. Elsie, finally. Your brothers have been giving me so many headaches, and you've been AWOL. I need you to, I said, not now, I repeat impatiently. I'm in the middle of something important. Lucas and Lance are adults. If they want to ruin their lives, by all means, let them. I don't care. And I don't care what Aunt Minnie says on Facebook. Please, stop calling me with anything related to that. I hang up. Jack stares at me with a stony, impenetrable expression. Sorry about that.
No problem. It was...
I squeeze my eyes shut. Unhinged?
I was going to say hot. Elsie, look at me.
His tone is commanding, but in a way, I don't mind.
Why are you here?
Because I close my eyes for a moment, take a million deep breaths. Because I accepted George's offer. And I'll be working here next year. His smile widens with undeniable happiness, then stops abruptly when I add, and because I hate you, Jack. I feel something warm on my lips, salty too. I hate you, and it's pretty annoying since I think I might also, I shake my head. And you're right, I am terrified. Scared shitless that the more you know me, the less you'll like me, and I loathe it sometimes. He gives me a confused, curious look. Like he knows that I'm complicated, but he doesn't mind. Like he'd rather spend the rest of his life studying an inch of me than discovering the mysteries behind the universe.
What do you loathe?
The way you seem to always get under my skin.
Elsie.
His eyes close for a brief moment. When he opens them, stars are born.
You think you don't live under mine?
I don't know, really. I don't really understand you. You didn't tell me about Lorindo, and you know everything about me, but I know next to nothing about you. I'm constantly showing myself, but you rarely reciprocate. Some, sure, but so much stays hidden, and I'm not sure what... He moves closer, cups my face. There are people all around us. Monica, Volkov, Andrea. Jack's current and my future colleagues are getting a show. But he bends down anyway, like my space is his own.
Okay, then. Honesty.
He tilts my face backward, lips brushing against my ears.
I want you, Elsie. All the time. I think of you. All the fucking time. I'm distracted. I'm shit at work. And my first instinct, the very first time I saw you, was to run away. Because I knew that if we'd start doing this, we would never stop. And that's exactly how it is. There's no universe in which I'm going to let you go. I want to be with you, on you, every second of every day. I think, I dream of crazy things. I want you to marry me tomorrow so you can go on my health insurance. I want to lock you in my room for a couple of weeks. I want to buy groceries based on what you like. I want to play it cool, like I'm attracted to you and not obsessed out of my mind, but that's not where I'm at. Not at all. And I need you to keep us in check. I need you to pace us because wherever it is that we're going, I'm here. I'm already right here.
Jack straightens. He takes a step back, an intense, calm look in his eyes. Like he said what he meant to and could never regret it. That was, I clear my throat, honest. He's quiet for a moment and then nods.
It's what I want to be, with you. And I'm sorry I lied.
It's okay. This once, I clear my throat. What you, the things, the fact that I take a deep, decisive, mind-clearing breath, and then I finally say it. I am too. His head tilts.
You're what?
Almost there. Where we're going. I'm practically there, really. It's like an inch away. I just need to... I take another breath, this time shuddering. I just need to find my footing. Feel the ground. He smiles and my heart thuds. Somewhere in the Tadpole Galaxy, comets are born. Stars spring into being. Liquid crystals twist, align, queue up in tidy formations.
I'm here,
Jack says. We're alone in this hallway, me and him. Just the two of us, in any way that matters.
But take your time, Elsie. I'll wait for as long as it takes.
Epilogue. 8 months later, I hatch the plan on a Sunday morning. The sun is bright, the curtains non-existent, and Jack's eyelids must be as blackout as ever because I get in at least 20 minutes of intense plotting before he wakes up to pull me closer. Then his stubble brushes against my belly and I tuck my plans aside, carefully stored in an uncluttered corner of my brain, and let myself giggle in his arms.
You seem pensive,
he points out later, in the kitchen, but I distract him with a kiss. His mouth is syrupy sweet, and the smell of waffles thickens the early morning fall air. The diversion works. It's a plan that will require practice and organization. A touch of logistical troubleshooting. The best option would be to recruit someone else to help me, but I don't know. I'd rather do this on my own. Except that Jack and I spend Sunday night the same way we do every Sunday, falling asleep on the sectional while catching up on articles. Mondays spent at Millicent's with the rest of the family, which involves the usual routine. Greg and I chatting about the YA books we've been buddy reading, Jack playing against his grandma at the Go board, and the rest of the family, Caroline included, respectfully avoiding mentioning that I went from dating one brother to the other. I'm not sure what went down there or what prompted the Smith cinematic universe to suddenly grow boundaries. I suspect that some overdue stern conversations were had, threats were made, and people were encouraged to either shut the hell up or never show up at Millicent's again. It worked. Tuesday night is also a no-go because I have therapy, which I now can miraculously afford. I've never been this healthy, mentally and physically. The wonders of having insurance. And most of the time, I really, truly believe that he sees me for what I am. But sometimes there is this petrifying fear, I explained to Jada, that maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's making a mistake. Maybe he'll change his mind. Maybe there's a deal breaker and he's days, seconds away from discovering it.
And what do we do when we feel like that?
We buy 5 pounds of Whole Foods Pecorino? Jada blinks at me, unamused. I sigh. We articulate our insecurities to our partner and listen to their answer. But it's not easy articulating. Getting easier, yes, but a few hours later, when I'm lying on the couch on top of Jack, all that comes out is, you're not going to suddenly realize that you don't really like me, right? He dips his chin to look at me.
If my feelings for you haven't changed after reading that Bella and Alice Alphaverse fanfiction, I'm pretty sure we're golden.
It's called Omegaverse, and you said it was good.
I said it was hot.
He corrects me. The blue slice darkens.
Actually, you should read it to me again. Now. I roll my eyes.
No, it's just that I promise I'm usually, but sometimes I feel like I'm not sure that I fall silent. There are no right words to be found in me.
Rough session with Jada?
Jack asks. and I nod till he holds me tighter. We watch one of his white male rage movies in silence, and between a car chase and a weird CGI monster and his hands anchoring me to him, I think that maybe there is no something, no deal breaker, no shoe that's about to drop. Maybe it's just us. So, Wednesday. Wednesday is supposed to be the day I execute my plan, but I wake up to the coolest email of my life. From editor at naturephysics.com. Subject, article ID 89274692. Dear Drs. Hanaway and Sepulveda, congratulations. I am pleased to inform you that following your revisions, your paper entitled Supermolecular Organization in Lyotropic Liquid Crystals, a New Theoretical Framework, has been accepted for publication in Nature Physics. Below, you will find additional information. That night, George's wife makes souvlaki to celebrate. It's delicious, but George and I are too busy reading and rereading the email and letting out annoying, high-pitched screams to truly savor it. We are obnoxious, but just cannot help ourselves.
Should we break up with them?
I hear Dora ask.
We certainly deserve better,
Jack answers. But that night, he hugs me from behind while I brush my teeth and whispers,
"You are the most magnificent thing that ever happened to me."
And I know it to be true. I'm a mess, a work in progress. I'm two steps forward and one step back. I hoard my cheese, and I can't efficiently load the dishwasher, and I'm going to struggle with the truth until the day I croak. Jack knows all of this, and he loves me. Not anyway, but because. So the next day, that's the one. Thursday. It's cutting it close, but it works. How's the job? Mom asks me on the phone while I'm on my way to my apartment. Good. Great, actually. And that boyfriend of yours? It feels a little robotic, like a list of questions that she's written in her notes app. But she's trying, and she hasn't demanded I take care of Lance and Lucas in a while. Has he proposed yet? I laugh. Mom, it's been less than a year. That's plenty of time. I don't need him to ask me to marry him, I say, distracted, rummaging in my bag for the keys that I almost never use anymore. I hope I haven't left them at Jack's. Why not? Because, ha, found them. Because I already know that he wants to. Cece arrives just a couple of minutes after we hang up. Does Jack know why you're here? She asks, cheeks bright from the cool breeze. Nope. I told him we were just hanging out. A last hurrah before we move out for real next month. Good idea. She watches me mix the powder in water. Maybe I should have brought Hedgie for girls' night. But Kirk'll enjoy some one-on-one time with her. He won't, since he's as terrified of her as I am. I finally feel seen. It's a bit bittersweet that we won't renew the lease, I say. Don't worry, she grins. I wrote down Mrs. Tuttle's HBO password. I laugh and shake my head. It's just the end of an era. It's not, because our new places are 5 minutes apart. Still, I glance around. Maybe I'll miss the coconut crabs and the exposed wires. I go back to stirring, and we're quiet for a while. Then her shoulder bumps against mine. Elsie? Yeah? FYI, you'll always be my favorite. You too, Cece. The red in the pot gets a bit blurry for a second. You too. The following morning, when Jack steps into his office, I'm already there, waiting in the chair behind his desk.
Well, 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 he says, surprised. Delighted. Look who's...
His eyes fall on the fruits of my labor. His little Hadron Collider model is, well, where it always is. Except today it's trapped in cherry jello. Happy birthday, I say. I'm a little breathless. I still get knocked off my feet when I see him after a while. I wonder if it'll ever end. I wonder if all these beautiful, momentous things I feel for him will ever settle into something ordinary. I can't imagine they will.
"The Jell-O is my birthday present?"
he asks, like he'd be overjoyed if it were. "Nope," I point to the card next to it. "That's the present." The dimple makes my heart skip a beat.
"Is it another Wayfair gift certificate? To buy more curtains?"
I laugh and swivel around in his chair. Faculty members do get better furniture than the postdocs. I listen to him tear open the plain envelope and let my eyes roam out the windows to the trees that are just about to turn red and yellow, to the students going about their lives, to the blue sky. Then I close my eyes and picture Jack's face as he reads my words. "Dear Jack, I know I've been slow, but I just wanted you to know something. I'm right here with you." Author's note. Love Theoretically is by far the most academic book I've written. I'd been wanting to tell a love story set against the backdrop of academic politics for a while. And for this one, I really let myself get into the weeds. Maybe a little too much? Sorry. But as usual, lots of elements were inspired by my own experience in the slightly cesspooly mess of the academe. Academic job interviews can be just as exhausting, long-winded, and soul-crushing as Elsie perceives them to be. The feuds within disciplines, just as petty. The power mentors have over their mentees, just as absolute. The adjunctification of higher education, which strands instructors with no job or financial security, just as terrifying. The bogus article Jack wrote is very loosely modeled after a real event. The Sokol hoax happened in 1996 when an NYU physics professor wrote and submitted a nonsense article to Social Text, a leading cultural studies academic journal, to make a point about its editorial sloppiness and lack of intellectual rigor. The article was accepted, and the controversies, implications, and academic infights that followed are history and documented in the Wikipedia entry, if you feel like busting out the popcorn. Either way, I hope you enjoyed this story. And if you're wondering why anyone would want to pursue a career in academia after all of this, well, there are tons of academics out there loving their jobs and yet wondering the very same. This is Therese Plummer. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Love Theoretically by Allie Hazelwood. This program was directed by Beth Hicks, executive producer Karen Jakonski, edited by Jake Nomura Weingrow. Text copyright 2023 by Allie Hazelwood. Production copyright 2023 Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.